Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Some people are sure they want children. Some are sure they don't. And some people just aren't sure. But what about being the fun aunt or uncle? Evan James found that role fit him perfectly. Tan France stars in Netflix's Queer Eye. His new show is called Next in Fashion. He reads Evan's essay, A Role I Was Born to Play.
I never did want children of my own, but competitive thoughts about family building started to invade my mind a little over 2 years ago when my older brother and his wife had a baby girl. Oh, so you think you're just gonna go and give birth? I said to myself. Well, I'll show you. I'll have 5 kids. No, 8. I'm gonna be the best, most overachieving gay dad in America. My drive for one-upmanship didn't last long. Fearing that if I did have a child, I would end up with a, we need to talk about Kevin situation on my hands, I soon yielded to gentler emotions. Pride at the sight of a flourishing family tree, a protective instinct, and giddy excitement. Never mind my feelings for the child herself, overnight I had become the most doting and caricatured of family figures. The gay uncle. At last, after years of wondering what role I was meant to play in my family, I could step into one that seemed comfortable. Distinguished queer elder, good-natured corrupter, lover of art and literature, spinster to be. I couldn't wait to fulfill this new purpose. Though I immediately flew across the country to begin teaching my niece about Hellenistic sculpture, I found her, at less than a month old, curiously glassy-eyed and uncommunicative. I had to wait 2 years, at which point she began talking a blue streak. The moment I entered my brother's house, I saw her staggering across the room, hand held aloft like some tiny grande dame. Oh, she cried, I have a hangnail! That's more like it, I thought. It's true that during my less charitable moments of fighting for sidewalk space in child-rich neighborhoods like Park Slope, I wanted to ash a cigarette over a double-wide stroller or two. Yet, little kids and I tend to love one another's company, if only because we invariably share the same psychotic imagination. A close friend of mine in college was once astounded when, during a family visit, I hit it off better with her kid brother than with any of her other relatives. We were all out eating lunch together, and the wee lad I'd been seated next to soon coaxed me into an extended dialogue about a bottle of hot sauce on the table between us. What if I got hot sauce in my eyes, he said. Your eye could catch fire, I said. What if you use hot sauce as shampoo? Oh yeah, your hair would catch fire. Oh yeah, and what if you filled a pool with hot sauce? After a few more of these exchanges, I saw him start to slide, as kids often do when subjected to absurd repetition, into a state of delighted hysteria. To keep him from filling the restaurant with screams, I got him to start drawing with me. Still, he could barely contain his excitement as we illustrated a scene in which a hot sauce storm struck a town, burning innocent bystanders with acid rain. Oh yeah, and what if the whole world was hot sauce? He boomed in one final, crazed, biblical proclamation. My niece proved a little slower to warm. To be fair, she was at that strange toddler age when language suddenly burst onto the scene with such force that parallel development of social graces can barely keep up. Before convention overtakes their speech, kids, as the old saying goes, say the darndest things. My niece and I were goofing around in the yard when she zoomed off to playhouse in one of those plastic structures her parents had bought her, the kind with beige and red and blue walls that lock together like a three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle. Believing myself invited, I followed, attempting to squeeze into the structure. It was decidedly not built to house giant adults. I managed to fit by crouching uncomfortably beside my niece, but she was not impressed. She stared at me for a second, then said, quite matter-of-factly, "Get out." She offered this blunt command with an effortless, pleasant air, as though she was saying, "Here, have a chocolate eclair." What could I do but leave the playhouse? And how many times had I longed to turn to some guest in my own apartment, some friend or acquaintance who had just walked in, and say the very same thing? We finally found some common ground later that afternoon when she wanted to go inside and spend some time with her wooden toy kitchen. Even I draw the line at playing Sylvia Plath with her two-year-old, but it was her idea to put some of her favourite stuffed animals in the oven. Her father is a chef, so I assumed he wouldn't mind. While I may have many years left in me, I find it unlikely that I'll ever conceive through a surrogate or adopt. When I imagine my future, it doesn't include the pitter-patter of little feet or the wailing of a colicky newborn. It doesn't necessarily even include domestic partnership. Oh, I know. It all becomes more possible every day. If shows like Modern Family or The New Normal are any indication, the shopworm category of the solitary queer uncle is fast being replaced with gay characters who are compelled to find equal footing as part of a nuclear family unit. I love kids, but my own adulthood is shaping up to include reading in unbroken solitude, unencumbered travel, free hours in which to write, and plenty of time with friends. Friendship, which Aristotle called a slow-ripening fruit, seems to suit my temperament better than the fruits of partnership or the pureed fruit hurled at me from a high chair. I guess that whatever happens, we know there will be fruit. It wouldn't make a great sitcom. Just last week, I signed onto Skype to see my six-month-old nephew, brother to my niece who roasts stuffed animals. On screen, my own mother held the slack-jawed tubby boy up for my viewing pleasure, as if he was Simba, the Lion King, or something. My niece sat on her own mother's knee and my younger brother floated cheerfully in the background. "Something's wrong with your computer," my mother shouted. "You're just a black shadow," my sister-in-law said. She was right. In the corner of my screen, I saw what they were seeing, a silhouette of me-shaped darkness. After several uncomfortable minutes, I finally got the webcam in working order. My features were now visible, but for some reason, the image remained monochrome. "Well," I said, "I guess you get me in black and white." "Uncle Evan!" said my niece, surprised at my sudden appearance. I asked her what was new, and she explained in ethereal tones that she was eating a popsicle. Before long, terrible microphone feedback struck, making conversation impossible. I clicked the X in the corner of my screen and my family disappeared. I was, as ever, alone in my apartment. I settled in to read a book, but I couldn't stop thinking about my niece and nephew. I like to imagine that my siblings' children will eventually make as many mistakes in life as the rest of us have. Who knows? But I hope, too, that I can live up to my new role if they do. If my niece eventually runs away from home, cuts off her hair and starts eating psychedelic mushrooms every day, I'll be there to take her to look at Francis Bacon's paintings, let her crash on my couch and listen to her talk about how she kind of wants to move to Berlin. Likewise, if my nephew, fat little question mark that he is at present, finds himself plunged into existential crisis in his mid-20s, I'll be there. Of course he should drop out of Harvard and travel the world in a rickety schooner with three people you just met, I'll say. What are you waiting for? Most parents are stuck being the voice of reason. It's the look of the solitary gay uncle that he gets to be the voice of creative anarchy. Of course, my niece and nephews may become CFOs, gastroenterologists, or personal injury lawyers. They may just decide they love the suburbs, marry young, and find themselves wealthy, healthy, and happy as clams. In which case, watch out, kids. It'll be me coming to stay on your couch.
That's Tan France reading Evan James's essay, A Role I Was Born to Play. We'll catch up with Evan and Tan after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with the first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
So, how did Evan James react when he heard that Tan France was going to read his essay for Modern Love?
Oh my God, when I got that email on Monday, I was so excited that I kind of felt like I felt dizzy. I never in a million years would imagine that this situation would arise and he would end up reading that essay and selecting it. So it was the surprise of a lifetime, especially since the essay was, you know, I'd written it 7 years ago.
Evan says that since his piece was published in 2012, he's become an uncle to two more boys.
They're kind of this little cyclone of activity that's very wondrous and amusing. When I Skype with them ever, it's just this very funny kind of chaos where they're tipping the laptop or the cell phone upside down and basically just screaming from all corners and running around with these laptops or what have you. One of my younger nephews took to calling me Uncle Dude for some reason. Every time he sees me, he calls me that and just bursts into laughter.
Evan has a partner now, but he doesn't have children, and his feelings about that haven't changed.
Every now and then I'll have some pang where I feel like, oh, I really want to have children, but it tends to be kind of fleeting. And I also have been teaching for the last 2.5 years at a K-12 school, and I'm exposed to children a lot. I spend a lot of time with them, and that has definitely helped shape my sense of whether or not I want to have kids. And I have to say, at the end of the day, it's just really nice to come home and, yeah, not have someone kicking a soccer ball in your stomach or whatever it is.
As for whether his niece seems like she's growing into the kind of person who will run away from home, be into Francis Bacon paintings, and kind of want to move to Berlin?
Jury's out. You never know what happens in life, I think. But that was probably more of a projection of mine when I wrote the essay. It was funny for me to imagine that when I was writing it, but really I want to see my nieces and nephews become themselves, whatever that might be.
And whoever they become, Evan does wonder how they'll react when they encounter his modern love essay for the first time.
Some of that stuff I imagine my brother and his wife probably are going to keep it away from them for some time until they're ready to have those kinds of conversations about what a psychedelic mushroom is, for instance. Or, you know, maybe they're still a little too young to put the idea of couch surfing in their heads.
Evan James. He's a teacher and writer, and he lives in Brooklyn. His forthcoming book is a collection of essays called I've Been Wrong Before. More from Tan France and Daniel Jones after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with the first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times.
What I really loved about Evan's piece was his personality, or the role that he saw his personality was in shaping these children who are not his, and being a sort of force for creative good and rebelliousness and all the things that I imagine he, when he was growing up, longed for. It's also just something he naturally thrives on. There's something so kid-like about his interactions. You know, when the girl gets old enough to say, you know, oh, I cried, I have a hangnail, and he just loves that and is entertained by the sort of heightened drama of childhood. And it's a good force, you know. People are raised by more than their parents, and necessarily so.
Tan France says he wanted to read this piece for a surprising reason.
The reason I wanted to read this essay, A Role I Was Born to Play, is actually because it goes against the role I truly believe I'm born to play. It talks about a man who feels like he's destined to not have children and be an uncle, and that was something I thought might be my destiny when I was a kid. And over the last 20 years or so, ever since I hit my teens, I was determined that that wasn't going to be my lot in life, and that's not to denigrate anybody else who chooses that. It just wasn't. It's not the destiny I want. And so him saying that, this character in this essay suggesting that he doesn't want necessarily to have children goes against what I want completely. So I just thought it was interesting to read a character who definitely isn't the person I am.
That's Tan France. He stars in Queer Eye. His new book is Naturally Tan, and his new Netflix show is called Next in Fashion. Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Special thanks to Julia Simon, Anya Stremian, and Mia Lee at The New York Times. Additional music, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My other job is hosting an NPR show called On Point. Check it out in your podcast feed. See you next week.